This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. Last week, Douglas Woods invited Ruby and Edie to the pictures, and Ruby's co-worker Janice invited Ruby and Edie to her place for a slap-up tea.
Janice opened the door, delighted to see them and full of apologies that she hadn't been able to give them a lift to the Cook Street house. "I was late picking Beryl up from the factory," she said. "Doesn't matter," said Ruby. "It wasn't raining and it's not far."
"Well, don't leave them standing on the step."
The voice came from a square-faced elderly woman with a bosom like a mantelpiece.
"Bring them in."
"Mum, this is Ruby," said Janice. "How do you do?" Ruby said. "I didn't know what to bring, so I brought some lemons."
"Hello," said Edie with some aplomb. "My name's Edith Henrietta Barton."
Henrietta. One day she must talk to Edie about putting on airs.
"Thanks for the lemons, love," Janice's mother said without introducing herself.
"Bit funny to bring anybody lemons." The thin-lipped woman who appeared must be Beryl, who made the good biscuits. Sour-faced, some years older than Janice, with none of her looks.
"She's Mrs. McIntosh."
She gave a jerk of her head towards her mother.
"Likes to be called Mrs. Mac, and you can call me Mrs. Swenson." "It's so nice Janice has made a new friend," said Mrs. Mac. "Don't you think so, Beryl?"
"It's the birthmarks ruined her chances," said Beryl. "She was engaged once, you know. After 2 years waiting, it turned out he'd proposed to someone else as well." Janice's birthmark flamed purple.
"Beryl, do you have to?"
"Sit down, why don't you?"
Mrs. Mac said.
"Can I get your little girl a drink?"
Ruby perched on the edge of an old armchair, hoping not to snag her good nylons on shreds of upholstery. Edie shyly leaned against her mother's knee.
"No thanks, Mrs. Mac."
"What about a sherry, Mum?" said Janice.
"Good idea."
Beryl limped to a cabinet.
"And where's your husband, Ruby? Staying in Auckland, is he? Or is he coming down later?"
"Beryl, you really are awful," said Janice. "Why are you giving Ruby the third degree?"
"Just conversation, sis."
Beryl blew dust out of a stemmed sherry glass. "He might have sent her and the kid on ahead." Janice clicked her tongue.
"What do you want to be like this for?"
Ruby dug into her bag of griefs. She gave a shuddering sigh as she shook her head. The old war widow lie. The one where she'd been so hard up she'd pawned her wedding ring. Damn them. So it was time to start again. Ruby added the finishing touch to her fiction.
"That war..."
Mrs. Mac passed a screwed-up hanky under watery eyes, then shoved it back into the folds of her bosom.
"Oh, my dear, I am sorry. So many. My boy Angus, not even 21.
"I'm sorry," said Ruby.
"It's been 10 years, Mum. You just get on, don't you, Ruby?"
Beryl poured sherry into each glass.
"And there's Beryl's gym," Mrs. Mac went on. Missing in action. Never found.
She raised her hand at the photographs on the old piano. The men in uniform stared blankly out of their black frames.
Somewhere in the jungle.
Her voice trailed off. Draining the glass lifted Mrs. Mack's mood, and she held it forward for another.
Janice says you're from Auckland.
Yes. The sherry was too sweet.
I've heard Auckland's a terrible place,
Mrs. Mack said, beginning to get loquacious.
You read terrible things in the paper. Murders, even. We're lucky to live here. Palmerston North is a God-fearing place.
Mum, you gave up going to church, said Beryl. Methodists won't have you. As for the Salvation Army, they're dead against people having a tipple.
I'm still a Christian, Mrs. Mack snapped. I go to church. Just not them when they're against things. When me knee's not giving me jip.
The beaches in Auckland are very nice, Ruby cut in.
Sometimes you can go in the water and dig down in the sand and get pippies, said Edie.
Oh, I wouldn't fancy that, said Mrs. Mack.
After that, no one spoke. Edie's eyes flickered between Janice and the other two women. Several lines of conversation appeared in Ruby's mind, each withered. Beryl pulled a small packet of Pall Malls out of the pocket of her apron, lit one, poured herself another sherry.
I thought Sis said you looked about the same age as her. Couldn't be possible. Sis is 26. But by the look of you, you must have been a young kid when you had Edith.
Janice gasped. Beryl? Thank you, Beryl. You're so kind. Ruby bared her teeth. It's been ages since anyone flattered me. Actually, I'll be 32 next September. She supposed by adding 5 years to her age, having a 10-year-old daughter seemed respectable and gave plausibility to the loss of her fictional husband. The tip of Beryl's tongue appeared from the slot of her mouth, and she blew a shred of tobacco onto the floor.
Auckland's got the Fountain of Youth up there, has it?
Ruby looked down at the curled corner of the rug. She wanted to leave.
Let's go and do your hair, said Janice, pulling on her sleeve. Tea will be a while, now the plonk's opened. You aren't hungry, are you?
No. If Ruby had been, she wasn't now. Shouldn't I offer to help in the kitchen?
Don't be daft, said Janice. Beryl's taken charge and I wouldn't go in there for quids if I were you.
Edie, leave those magazines and come and watch me get a new hairdo, said Ruby.
Can I bring this?
Said Edie, holding up a copy of Picture Parade. They didn't speak while Janice's scissors snipped. With every handful of hair that came off, pieces of an outer shell of Ruby's old life were falling away. Edie collected a handful of Ruby's curls.
Can I keep your hair?
No, put it down, said Ruby. You don't want old hair.
What if I do?
Said Edie. Put it down. In the dressing table mirror, Janice's face was fixed in serene concentration. The beauty of her features eclipsed the crimson birthmark. When the snipping stopped and Ruby's hair was brushed, their eyes met in the glass.
Done.
Janice gave Ruby a hand mirror to show her the back view. Edie put aside her reading.
Oh, Mum, you look brand new.
Thank you, chicken. I feel new, too. Ruby patted the cropped hair and turned the mirror this way and that to see her profile.
Janice,
I don't know what to say. The contour of her skull sloped elegantly to her long, narrow neck. She ran her hand over the sleekness of it. I never imagined.
Gorgeous! Janice clapped her hands. I shouldn't skite, but I think this is the best I've done. Luckily, you've got the right hair for it. See how it makes your eyes stand out?
You're beautiful, Mum.
Edie's tone was hushed with awe.
What was left of the bouncing waves that had annoyed Ruby before now gave body to a short fringe and cleverly cut wisps that framed her face. Her ears. Now she wanted earrings more than ever. She'd given up writing a list of things she needed and wanted. Thank you, Janice. Honestly, I don't know what I can give you in return, other than helping you clean this up. I'll think of something. Edie, said Janice, would you go out and ask Mum for the dustpan and brush for me, love? As she left, Janice put her arm around Ruby's shoulder and kissed her mouth. Women's kisses were always petal soft, wasted on men. I should be the one thanking you. I loved doing it, Janice said. Ruby accepted her next kiss. A little more pressure. Lips opened a little. Then Janice pulled back to admire her work. Turn around again, she said. Ruby, you really are beautiful, you know. It's not just my haircut. No, it's what you've done. Ruby ruffled her hands through the sleek pelt her hair had become. In the mirror, it seemed to stay perfectly in place. It was so short it had nowhere to go. What would Douglas think of it?
Tea's ready,
Beryl yelled from the kitchen. Go on, said Janice. I'll tidy up. See what they say. Down the passage, she heard the other two muttering in the kitchen. It was impossible not to catch one repeated sibilant punctuating their words. Beryl's voice strident, even in a whisper, the mother's cracked and wheedling.
She's divorced. That story can't be. She, no ring. Did you see? Tart. She, indecent. She,
can't see that.
Janice. That type. She, and she, no better than she should be.
Ruby stepped into it. Janice will be here in a second.
See what Janice did to Mum's hair, said Edie.
Janice joined them, pleased with herself.
She does look cool, doesn't she?
Far too modern for a lady of her age, said Beryl.
Janice rolled her eyes and pulled out a chair at the table. A vase of faded crepe paper flowers stood next to a bottle of tomato sauce. The sherry in the bottle was well below the label.
So, Ruby, what do you think of your boss? Beryl said.
She's very nice, said Ruby.
Madam is, Janice began, expressing the formal pronunciation. I'm asking Ruby, snapped Beryl. We know what you think.
No, no, girls, said Mrs. Mack.
Sis thinks that so-called madam is a countess, Beryl said with a derisive snort. Or did you say communist?
I never said any such thing.
Ruby, when you get to know Sis properly, said Beryl, you'll see she's always in some dream world. Mr. Luddock up at the dairy reckons she's a Jew.
Not surprising,
put in Mrs. Mack.
What she charges for a hat?
Madam especially designs hats for her clientele. Ruby decided there was no point talking about workmanship or how each hat was lined with silk. Rayon, at least.
Clientele? Beryl mocked. Did you hear that, Mum?
Never heard the like, Mrs. Mack said.
She'd have been a goner if she'd stayed in her own country, said Beryl. You're a really horrible specimen, Beryl, Janice said. You don't know anything.
Mrs. Mack burped loudly and gave her chest a thump.
That's just it. Nobody does.
Beryl was enjoying herself.
Everybody says that accent of hers is nothing but an act to make people think she's something special. Airs and graces. I bet if you turned up at her place in the weekend, she'd be in curlers and slippers and talking like any normal person.
Ruby and Edie glanced at each other. Janice went to the sink,
returning with a dishcloth and wiped grime and smears off the cruet set.
"Janice tells me you're staying in one of the boarding houses."
Mrs. Mack tilted her empty glass in Beryl's direction.
"Which one? There is any number of boarding houses, and some of our best big old homes got opened up for every man and his dog coming into town after the war, except the ones getting torn down."
"We're at Arcadia House," said Edie.
"Oh!"
Mrs. Mack's open mouth collapsed in a grimace.
"With your little girl, too."
"It's temporary," said Ruby.
"Not that place in David Street," Beryl tossed. "You're staying in that doss house full of old deadbeats and filthy Maoris."
"You can't say that,"
Edie banged her fist on the table.
"One of the chaps at Arcadia lost an arm fighting the Germans in Italy, and he got a medal, too. And the Maoris are my friends, and Ben plays the proper Spanish guitar, and Kitty can sing as good as anyone on the radio, so there."
"Well,"
Mrs. Mack pulled her chin into folds. Beryl's lips disappeared into her face. In the kitchen, Janice had opened the oven door, releasing a wave of acrid smells into the room.
"I think this is past being ready, Beryl."
Ruby's insides fizzed with pride at Edie's outburst in defense of her new friends, and she fought an impulse to give in to hysterical laughter. She concentrated on the shape of a grubby patch on the tablecloth instead, until the urge subsided. Edie went back to the bench seat and started looking through a pile of old magazines and newspapers.
"Quite a reader, isn't she?"
Mrs. Mack said. Beryl poured herself another sherry.
"Mm-hmm,"
Edie piped, giving the word two notes.
"What does carnal knowledge mean?"
"What?" Ruby leapt up.
"Where the hell did you get that from?"
Beryl erupted into harsh laughter.
"Ha! She'll likely find out, won't she?" It's in the New Zealand Truth."
Bewildered, Edie held up the newspaper with the lurid banner. Janice's reddened face was a portrait of horror.
"Shit, Ruby, I'm sorry."
"Oh, for God's sake!" Ruby didn't stop herself shouting.
"What's it doing out here? We're a child."
Edie's chin trembled.
"What did I say?"
"Never you mind."
She pulled Edie close, wrapping her arms around her. "Nothing you need to know about. That paper's only for certain kinds of adults."
"I'm so, so sorry, Ruby." Janice was distraught.
"Don't worry, Janice, it's not your fault.
I hope you don't mind, Mrs. Mack, but it's time Edie and I went."
"I'm sorry, Janice, we have to go."
"You haven't had tea,"
cried Mrs. Mack, brandishing a fistful of cutlery.
"Let him go, Ma,"
said Beryl.
"Stuck up."
Ruby pushed Edie into her coat.
"We'll walk."
Janice's face was white as she opened the door.
"No,"
she shouted over her shoulder.
"Beryl, I'm taking Muriel."
"There's no need for you to keep saying sorry," said Ruby as Janice drove them along Main Street, where a cloud of smoggy steam from a train drifted over the road.
"I've said, it wasn't your fault.
And you'd better stop crying or you won't be able to see properly and you'll bang into something."
"I know, it's just..."
Janice's tears glistened as they passed a street lamp. Her nose had a drip on the end of it. She wiped it away with the back of her hand.
"I'm so sorry."
"I'm sorry too." Ruby took her folded hanky out of her purse and passed it across. "Here. No use getting covered with snot as well."
"Thanks. I'm so..."
Janice caught Ruby's eye and they began to laugh. It was the medicine they needed. Between them on the front seat, Edie was quiet.
"Are you serious about moving out of the place you're in?"
asked Janice. "I'm very serious," said Ruby. "I've got nothing against the Arcadia people.
It's just that I don't want to go on living in an awful old boarding house. I feel as though I can't breathe. And I want something better for Edie.
I know what you mean, Janice said. That's how I feel. And that's home.
Ruby silently reviewed the evening. It was a wonder that Janice could remain uncrushed by living with Beryl's bullying and bitterness.
Tell you what, said Janice as they turned into David Street.
I've been asked to look after a house down the road from us. The old people want someone to mind their house and their cat for a whole month. They're visiting family in Melbourne. Why not dig in with me for a few weeks, while you look for a flat? Maybe we could find a place together.
Although she wanted to refuse outright, Ruby sensed that Janice had had enough blows for one evening.
I don't know. Would they mind?
They wouldn't know.
Janice stopped outside Arcadia House and pulled on the handbrake.
I'd love you two to come. It'd be fun.
Fun?
Edie sat up.
Where are we going?
Shush, we're talking.
Ruby nudged Edie and looked across to Janice.
You might rather be alone.
If I was looking forward to being on my own, I wouldn't have asked you, Janice said. Ruby had enough on her plate without having to make life more bearable for Janice.
I don't know.
Honestly, it'd be so good to have someone nice to talk to. Janice's eyes were pleading.
I imagine so, said Ruby.
Janice had made a beautiful job of her hair. She owed her new friend something.
You said there's a cat?
A cat?
Edie squealed.
Persian, I think.
Janice waggled her eyebrows at Edie.
When are we going?
Said Edie. Ruby patted Edie's wrist.
I have to find a school before the end of next week.
Edie folded her arms.
About next week.
Please think about staying, said Janice.
It's cozy. Two bedrooms. One of them with twin beds in it. We'd have the whole place to ourselves.
We'll see. It did sound good. A bathroom where they could take their time, fresh towels, and a kitchen that didn't resemble a railway station.
Edie pulled on Ruby's sleeve.
But where is the school?
Ruby shrugged her off. Don't interrupt, Janice and I are talking. I suppose we could spend a day or two. I could cook for us.
Would you? Janice brightened. I can't cook to save myself. I can do eggs, and that's about all. Left to myself, I'd rather just heat a tin of something and eat it with a spoon.
Let me think about it. The engine idled. The soft shadows of the dim yellow street lamp enhanced the contours of Janice's face. Her birthmark was invisible. With the car window frame behind her, she was like a painting.
I haven't had any tea, said Edie.
There might be leftovers in the kitchen, said Ruby. Or I'll cook you an egg.
Thanks for my hairdo, Janice. I love it. I'll think about... Before Ruby finished her sentence, Janice leaned behind Edie and kissed Ruby on the lips again. Light as the wing of a moth.
Did you kiss my mum?
Said Edie with a giggle. A faint flutter within Ruby unfolded itself. She opened the car door.
I certainly did, said Janice. Just because your mum's smashing.
Bye-bye, darlings.
Edie put her hand in Ruby's as Muriel the Vauxhall disappeared around the corner.
Come on, chicken,
said Ruby, giving Edie's hand a gentle tug.
I don't want to go to their place again,
Edie said.
You were very good tonight.
I was, wasn't I? It was quite hard. I'm sorry I looked at that grown-up's paper. How was I supposed to know?
You weren't to blame.
It said New Zealand truth. It looked interesting.
We won't think about it anymore.
Ruby pulled the green scarf out of her coat pocket and covered her hair. As much as she liked what Janice had done for her, She couldn't endure one more comment from anyone or take part in any sort of conversation. Being alone with Edie had never been more appealing. On the other hand, she wouldn't turn down a quiet cup of cocoa with Douglas.
"How did you know Ron got a medal?" she asked Edie before opening the front door.
"He didn't take you into his room to show you, did he?"
Edie looked up.
"No, I fibbed. He wasn't even in the war. I asked him, and he said he lost his arm in a machine in a factory."
"He'd have been too old for the war anyhow," said Ruby. "Why on earth did you make up that story?"
"Because," said Edie in a serious tone, "except for Janice, they're the worstest people in the whole world."
Ruby tucked a strand of hair behind Edie's ear.
"My dear, dear little chicken."
Edie flung her arms around her mother's waist.
"Mum, what school am I going to go to after the holidays?"
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.